massively for inviting me to speak. It's really good fun. Well, I hope it might not be really good fun. It might be terrible. Let's find out. So, Battersea Arts Centre is 31 years old, and our mission is to invent the future of theatre. So we're interested in what comes next, what's the dynamic new entrance that's going to happen in theatre. Just to say a little bit about the building, the room that you're sat in, but I think it's got some resonances with some of the things we're talking about today. This was the former town hall, and we hold that very true in our practice in terms of inventing the future of theatre. We love the history of this building and this space. In fact, in this room, John Archer, who was the first Black Mayor of London, was elected in 1913. Emily Pankhurst and the Suffragette Movement spoke in the back half of the building, the Grand Hall and the Lower Hall. And actually, the very first organised socialist party in this country, which was called the Social Federation Party, was based in this building. And so, you know, these walls and this building has sort of seen there, been there, done it, and got a t-shirt. And I think it's useful to kind of remember that. And I might come back to, I guess, that kind of civic quality of leadership, if you like, in a moment. I'm going to just tell you a story. It's a story that actually happened in this room, or a large part of it happened in this room. And it's not a story that we've told publicly before. We've kind of shared it informally with people. So I'm going to share it publicly. So it might be an absolute disaster. So the story starts basically with Lehigh Theatre. I'm also chair of Lehigh Theatre, as well as being joint artistic director of Battersea Arts Centre with David Mitford. We made a show with Lehigh in 2007 in this space, 2006-07, called Rapunzel. Many of you will know the story of Rapunzel in the way that Lehigh told it, the kind of sexual awakening. The growing up and maturing of a young girl. And we told that story to large audiences in 2006-07 in this space. It was around that same time that we just started a schools programme. Sarah Golding, who was at that time our participate director and now associate artistic director, was leading on putting that schools programme together. Many of you will know, if you know a little bit about theatre, that the theatre has a tradition of kind of children's theatre companies that tour theatres on a Saturday afternoon. Let's call them Squirrel Nutkins Theatre Company, is the sort of generic name for that theatre company. And a lot of them are really good people doing really good things, but what tends to happen is they get their show dumped on top of the main stage show in that theatre space, or in that occupied building. And well-to-do, well-meaning parents come along and sort of, you know, get the Guardian and the Times out and sit and read it in the back row, whilst the children sort of run around and create Mary Helen in the theatre while this poor single artist with six puppets and a mop tries to regain control. And it's quite tough as a way of working. So we decided to stop working in that way and start trying to have a schools programme and going out and taking artists to schools. And Sarah was very keen to work with a school in this borough, Gatton Primary School. Which is a strict Muslim faith primary school. And Sarah at that time wanted to engage Gatton into the school's programme and start getting artists going into schools, into Gatton particularly, as one of the kind of six regular primaries that we would work. Sarah said a great way to start that relationship would basically be to get the whole couple of years of the school to come and see the show, to come and see the Rapunzel. But that we would have to change the show if we were going to make it happen, if we were going to enable that to happen. Because there were things in the show that wouldn't be acceptable in terms of the teaching staff's opinion of what the young people could or couldn't see. And so that raises interesting questions. It raises interesting questions in terms of the art, ethical questions, moral questions, censorship questions, etc. And I have to say, this story doesn't show me anything. In that I think my response, my instinctive response in that moment was quite negative. I guess perhaps because I grew up in a Christian household for 18 years and was told to go to church every Sunday and sort of had my life sort of very, quite strictly controlled. There was something in me that felt uncomfortable, if you like, about this challenge. However, the artist in this context, Emma Rice, and also the creative thinker, Sarah Golding, both had an instinctive response to explore, to say actually what would happen next, what would happen if we engaged in this conversation. So Sarah invited two of the teachers, and I think quite cleverly, one of the teachers who was perceived on the liberal wing of the teaching staff, and one of the teachers who was perceived on the more conservative wing of the teaching staff, to come and see the show, and to then talk to Emma about what might have to change in terms of the show, in order to then get the school group down to see the work. And when they came to see the show, Emma and Sarah met with the teachers, and four things needed to change in relation to the show. The first was that there could be no stringed instruments in the performance. The second was that there could be no flattering in the performance. The third was that there could be no sexual innuendo in the performance. And the fourth was that there could be no tapping. So these are the four things that needed to change in the show. Now, in some shows, indeed, perhaps it's for a Muppet show, that probably would have been absolutely fine. But because this is a show by Nehi Theatre, I don't know if any of you know Nehi Theatre, then there are a lot of those things in Nehi shows. And therefore, it became quite a major challenge to think about, you know, a really kind of quite significant restructure of the show. Emma Wright decided in that moment, with Sarah's support, in terms of Sarah managing the relationship with the staff at the school, to take on that challenge. And she spent the day working with the actors in this space to then adapt the show. And we presented then the show to 120 young people from Gatton Primary School in this space from years, from between ages of 8 and 11. When they came into the space, they all filed in and sat down and started to watch the show for the first 20 minutes. And I was sitting watching the show with Emma and with Sarah. And for the first 20 minutes, there was absolute silence in this room apart from the show. And that's perhaps unsurprising, because actually it's a quite formal situation. About half of the children hadn't seen this show before, and therefore there's a lot new about circumstance, and so perhaps not surprising. But that quietness in a theatre show, in a Christmas show like Rapunzel, is also quite challenging. And we did, after 20 minutes, feel as though we may have made a mistake. By the end of the show, about 20 to 30 of the young people were on stage with the rest of the cast and were advising and instructing and waving hands and shouting as to what the characters in the story should or shouldn't do. And there was an incredible sense of engagement and participation. It was, in a sense, a bit like Lord of the Flies, compressed over about an hour and 20 minutes. And I think the show probably had to stop when it stopped, because actually they were in a completely unclear takeover. Which is partly, again, just simply to do with the knowing the conventions of a show. And actually, these young people were changing the conventions of theatre in that moment, which was really exciting. So it was a fun event, and it was a fun moment for all of us engaged in that show. But for us at Battersea Arts Centre, it did catalyse a relationship with that primary school. And actually now, Gatton have been part of our school's programme over the last 4.5 years, and we've got artists going into that school on a regular basis. And we've also got, just like we would want with any school, and the whole point of us working with schools is the strength and creativity in the curriculum in that school, drawing materials and music, making materials and instruments that weren't in that school before we started working. And so Gatton, in a sense, and BAC are two different parts of the community that have reached out to each other in that moment and simply just made a connection. And that connection has had a positive impact over the following few years. I think it's a story that I choose to tell because obviously it connects to some of the themes of today, but I think it's also interesting to reflect on some of the kind of leadership that Emma and Sarah and those teachers showed in that story. And perhaps the first one to reflect, I guess, relates to this space, relates to this room, which is there's almost a kind of civic leadership in the way that they approach that. There's an interest in how a community better connects and better leads each other to get on better. And certainly in terms of the isolation of Battersea Arts Centre from Gatton and of Gatton from Battersea Arts Centre, that spreads out across the borough. Three other things that I think that those leaders in that moment demonstrated, which are interesting. One is that they were prepared to get it wrong. And that all of them, as teachers, as participate directors, as artists, Emma Wright, were prepared to cop up and for what they were trying to achieve to fail in front of their peers. And I don't think that should be underestimated, because I think constantly, I know I often will not go down a road or a route because I am worried about what my colleagues will think if it fails or I fail. The second thing is that I think it's interesting in the chain of decisions that were made by Emma and Sarah and those teachers in that story were very people-centred. They remained very close to people, to the decisions that had to be made in relation to the adaptation of the show, in relation to the way that they engaged the young people in the work. The decision chain, if you like, remained very people-centred. And the third thing is that I think there was a nice balance in what they did, all of them, between provocation, if you like, balance between provocation and collaboration, which I think is an interesting thought around leadership in itself, is that you provoke but you very quickly collaborate. So why, I've been asked to speak, I should have said at the beginning, I've been asked to speak about the importance of artists as leaders. And I guess the reason why I've told you that story and I pick out those qualities is because for me those are the qualities of artists. They are the qualities of inspired leadership. For me that is the way that artists work. Artists do tend to be good at preparing themselves and others to fail. Artists do prepare, are prepared to make their work and their process quite people-centred. However, I do have also, I guess, a cautiousness about that sentence, the importance of artists as leaders, because in a sense it feels to me like it's slightly territorial. It's like the importance of politicians as leaders, or the importance of teachers as leaders, or the importance indeed of any different profession we might choose as leaders. And I wonder whether the question that I guess I'm interested in talking about, and I think have been talking about, is simply the importance of leading creatively. It's the importance of creativity in leadership. And I think if we ask ourselves that question about creativity in leadership, which is interesting when you surf through lots of kind of leadership manuals, lots and lots of talk about leadership management methods, not many of them touch on actually how do you lead creatively, or what does that mean? Then I think we can start to ask ourselves interesting questions about then how we can support people to lead creatively. So in relation to funds, in relation to policymakers, in relation to arts organisations, in relation to the built environment, or in relation to education, how might we support people to lead more creatively? And I thought I would just finish with a very brief definition of leadership, that sort of leadership is ... just to finish off. So leadership is when Fran, who is project manager for our cookout project, works out a creative solution as to how to cook 120 people something for lunch on Monday, when she finds out on Friday before that Mickey, our chef, is off for a week. So good luck, lunch. Put another way, things only work when we all put our creative minds to leading, and we work how we connect what we are leading with what someone else is leading. We balance